Welcome back to Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now we're going to talk with John Amen, who, by the way, has been very much involved in the pro-life movement for years. He has recently written a book called The Obamacare Death Panel. It's an actual aspect of Obamacare known as the Independent Payment Advisory Board, or IPAB. John joins us now. John, is that fair when some people, for example, Sarah Palin, famously called the Independent Payment Advisory Board a few years ago, she called it a death panel. Is that fair? Is that just?
Yeah. Hi, Jerry. Yes, hi. I think that the charge sticks. I think that it is an accurate description of what the Independent Payment Advisory Board will wind up doing as it tries to cut the rate of growth of Medicare in the United States.
Okay, can you explain to us what exactly is the Independent Payment Advisory Board?
Sure. It's a 15-member panel of are charged, as I say, with the responsibility primarily of slowing the rate of growth of Medicare in the United States. It's a board that's unelected, and its decisions are not reviewable by any court or other higher body. So it really has the power to determine how much money is spent in the United States on Medicare. And the way it does this is it'll supply advisory recommendations that are basically have the force of law. And it allows, the result will be that it'll set reimbursement rates for doctors so low that some doctors and some hospitals just won't bother with providing the services because they can't do them and make any money at it. And so when those services and some drugs are not available, people will go without. And when you go without health care, you may wind up either suffering or in some cases losing your life. And I don't really think that that's overstating it, because we've seen what can happen when healthcare is mismanaged by the government, with what occurred at certain VA hospitals, particularly those in Phoenix where some people sadly died.
Huh. Now, would a wealthy person, let's say a wealthy family, if they were faced with these kinds of decisions and they were told, okay, there's no more money to help Aunt Martha out in her condition, could they uproot and then just go to, you know, India or Costa Rica or something like that, or just temporarily go there for treatment? I mean, they wouldn't be penalized by the law for doing that, would they? I know in some cases people in Canada have been penalized for coming to the United States to get treatments that they're not allowed to have under their system of national health care, but they do it anyway because they want their relative to live.
No, not to my knowledge. There is no penalty that's imposed on people who seek to pay out of their own pocket.
So in a sense, then, this is really going to hurt the working poor.
Right. It does penalize people who don't have the adequate resources to pay out of their own pocket. But, I mean, you know, that's the whole idea of insurance, is that it's supposed to cushion the burden of the financial cost of certain health care expenses. And so whether you're poor or rich, if you have to shell out $50,000, that's going to really pinch you hard unless you're extravagantly rich. But the real problem is that under Medicare, as these cuts are imposed by the Independent Payment Advisory Board, certain services will just not be available as readily. And so in some cases, people on Medicare will find themselves at the emergency room along with people on Medicaid, as is now the case.
Wow. And, you know, this reminds me of that old statement made years ago that it said something like this: if you think healthcare is expensive now, just wait till it's free. Of course, there's nothing free. You know, government expense means somebody has to pay for it. And when the government forces itself in issues like health care, then ultimately this just ends up to rationing, right?
Yeah, that's true. Rationing is really the only logical result when you have a central authority, the federal government in this case, which by force of law administers health care. If the public is paying and the costs go up, the only mechanism that government has is to ration care. And that's something that the architects of Obamacare have been willing to acknowledge. Jonathan Gruber, who's become famous for his videotaped comments, said much the same several years ago, that basically denial of care is the solution to rising costs, the alternative being that if the care isn't available through Obamacare or through Medicare, people just pay for it out of their own pocket. And another architect of Obamacare, Ezekiel Emanuel, came out recently with a very interesting article in which he announced that he wants to die when he's 75.
When he's how old?
75.
Okay.
Okay, so he's 57 now. So he's got a few good years left in his view, but as he declines bodily, he doesn't want to take the kinds of medical interventions that are available, like no defibrillator for him, or presumably he won't take chemotherapy if he faces cancer. He just wants to let nature take its course. Well, his approach is not just for himself. That's also the kind of ethic that he and others who helped to engineer Obamacare want to impose on the rest of us. It's kind of a utilitarian approach to healthcare as opposed to a compassionate approach.
Yeah, sort of homo economicus. You have value as long as you can contribute to the economy. And it's very different than a Christian world and life view, which says that we have value because God made us in his image. I understand that you have pointed out that even some Democrats are also strongly opposed to the idea of the Independent Payment Advisory Board, such as Howard Dean, who's very liberal, and he's also a medical doctor.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. He is a doctor, so he has some, you know, personal knowledge about the delivery of health care, and he can see fairly clearly what's going to happen when the reimbursement rates are cut unilaterally by the Independent Payment Advisory Board. And again, those decisions by IPAB aren't subject to review, and it takes a Herculean effort by the U.S. Congress to overturn them. Essentially, a 60-vote supermajority in the Senate has to be mustered in order to overturn IPAB decisions. But what Howard Dean said was that he called IPAB essentially a healthcare rationing body. He said that the law doesn't really authorize IPAB to ration healthcare. That's the outcome. And as Dean said, when you set reimbursement levels too low, no doctor or hospital will perform them. So it's rationing. It's rationing by lowering the price and basically taking economic players out of the delivery of healthcare, because people have to get paid to do what they do, and if they're not getting paid, then their services will not be available out there in the healthcare market. And he's not the only one. There was a gentleman, Pete Stark, who's an arch-liberal in Congress for about 30 years. He's no longer in Congress, but at the time, he voted for Obamacare at the time it passed, but he was strongly opposed to IPAB. He called it a rate-cutting mechanism that'll wreak havoc on the elderly through the delivery of healthcare services through Medicare. So there are a few, and some Democrats have even voted in the House of Representatives to repeal IPAB. What remains to be seen is what they'll do in this upcoming session of Congress, whether or not they'll join Republicans in seeking its overturn.
You know what's so interesting? You know what's so interesting about that remark you made a few minutes ago, too, about the 75-year-old, you know, hey, when I'm 75, I don't want any treatment. That's what he says now. But what about when he is 75? You know, because in a sense, we are aging over time. They say something like, you know, 60 is the new 50, or 50 is the new 40, or whatever. In other words, we are getting better in some ways. We're living longer. And so how do you know? I mean, for example, the retirement age at the age of 65, the reason they even set things up way back when, apparently can be traced back to Kaiser Wilhelm or Hindenburg, or, you know, somebody like that way back when, because most people died at the age of 65. So they said, okay, let's give them you know, we'll give them retirement benefits at the age of 65 because nobody's going to live till then. but we are living beyond 65. So this seems to be so arbitrary. And why does the government have to force itself into this area in the first place? That's the core problem right there.
Yeah, it's a good question. And one part of the answer, I can think of at least a couple of answers. One is that some people just know better than the rest of us how we ought to live.
Yeah.
And that is impulse that drives Obamacare to some extent. And that really is part of what's behind IPAB, because it's government, it's rule by experts. These are supposedly experts in healthcare and healthcare economics that know how to make the fine decisions that supposedly the market can't make in determining what prices to set and what services to deliver through Medicare. And the other reason, though, is that and it's a little more pernicious. And the idea is that by providing health care through the federal government, you can, as one author put it, and an author who has advised both the Clinton administration in the 1990s and Obama on health care, he said that centralized health care is a way to turn benevolence to power. In other words, you create a system where people are getting, on the one hand, certain benefits because there is a portion of the population that is receives subsidized health care under Obamacare, and then they're supposedly grateful, and they may become, you know, faithful voters on behalf of the party that gave them that service. And then you basically create a constituency as a result, and you gain certain power over people's lives in a way that you really don't through any other system. Holding the reins of healthcare in the United States gives extraordinary power to the federal government, and so there is a cause for legitimate concern in that respect as well.
So, in other words, this is in some ways this could be viewed, I guess, cynically, but it could be viewed as being something that will just create more voters who will be further dependent on the government, therefore they will tend to vote liberal. I mean, that's kind of disturbing, but it does seem to be a trend. You see that, how many years of research do we need showing that welfare hurts the recipients of welfare, and yet the programs still remain, despite, you know, all the things that Robert Rector or the Heritage Foundation and other groups show? The fact of the matter is they still do it because it creates a big power base for the voting. As you were putting this book together, were there any surprises, you know, any facts that you learned that you were just shocked at finding?
Yeah. Well, I was pretty intrigued and surprised by what I saw about how there is public discussion by liberals of their support for healthcare rationing. One of the people I quote in the book is Robert Reich. He's a former Clinton administration labor secretary, and he's still a widely influential liberal voice. He told an audience at Berkeley, and I listened to the audio tape of it. It's probably an audio tape he wished had never been made. But anyway, he's talking to this class at Berkeley about what an honest candidate for president would say about health care reform. This was in about 2007. So it was during the time of when Obama was out there in the hustings and talk about health care reform was ongoing. What Reich said was that if you're a candidate who's honest, he would say the following: if you're very old, we're not going to give you all that technology, Reich said, and all those drugs for the last couple of years of your life to keep you maybe going for another couple of months. And the honest candidate in Reich's view would say, quote, it's too expensive, so we're going to let you die.
Wow. So, welcome, you know, to Obama's America.
They're willing to make these economic decisions because they're not informed by the Christian view that life is sacred and that you can't put a price tag on it. In their view, you can, and they don't factor God and the way He's made us into the equation at all. And that's why there's a true human price to pay: denial of service and potentially loss of life as a consequence.
John, we have less than 30 seconds to go. How about a concluding thought in terms of, is this a hopeless battle, or is there something we can still yet do when it comes to the Obamacare death panel, so-called?
No, it's not at all a lost battle. There is quite a bit of support within Congress for repealing IPAB. The challenge will be to override the president's veto. And there's also a appeal before the U.S. Supreme Court seeking to overturn IPAB, which has been working its way through the courts and is now in front of the Supreme Court. And in fact, we may see a response from the court within the next several weeks. They could always delay, but there's some expectation it could occur in the next several weeks. So,
John Amon, thank you so much for joining us. Again, djameskennedy.org.